Chapter 14. Never take a gamble you're not prepared to lose. Abdul Goldberg, rogue trader. My order to pull back had bought us a little time at least. The horde of mutant crossbreeds vomited out of the tunnel between us and the tower, forcing the two parties apart, taking punishing casualties, but still laying down a withering volley of fire as they came. I recognised the tactic from the cleansing of Kefia, and Jürgen evidently did too, as he raised the melter before falling back. The blast of superheated air roared against my face, vaporising the oncoming Steeler and chewing a chunk out of the front few ranks. The firing continued, with las bolts and bullets chewing up the masonry around us, and I felt a sudden blow against my chest. I glanced down. A las bolt had impacted against the borrowed armour beneath my greatcoat, and I blessed the foresight that had impelled me to requisition it. We were all shooting continuously now, the troopers retreating in good order by fire and movement, much to my relief. Amberlee had produced a bolt pistol from the depths of her cloak and wielded it with a skill no less greater than my own, bringing down two more of the bounding monstrosities with carefully placed shots. The explosive bolts detonated inside their chitinous shells, blowing their thoraxes to bloody mist. "Keep your distance!" I shouted. The hybrids were hoping to pin us, allowing the pure strains to close, and if that happened, it would all be over. They bounded forward eagerly, claws scything. And if you think that's not intimidating to a man with a gun, then all I can say is count yourself lucky you've never been close to one. I was there when the reclaimers boarded the spawn of damnation and saw the pure strains which infested it tearing open their Terminator armour as though it were cardboard to get at the Astartes within.
The spawn of damnation was a space hulk which drifted into the Corollian gap in 928. Kane was liaising with the Astartes chapter in question at the time, as a member of the brigade command staff, and went in with the Imperial Guard unit detailed to mop up after the initial Astartes assault.
After that, you can be sure I never wanted to be within an arm's length of those killing machines again. And since they have four of the damn things, that can be harder than it sounds. You don't have to tell me twice! Trebek placed a couple of accurate shots, downing a pure strain and a hybrid with a flamer. Thank the Emperor she'd spotted that, I thought, or it would have been the end of us for sure. Sorrel followed up, putting a round through the Prometheum tank, and the width of the gallery erupted in flame. "Good shooting," I said. He acknowledged the compliment with a nod and turned to retreat. He'd bought us some time, I noted with gratitude, the Inferno blocking us off from our assailants and consigning many of them to an agonising death. The most terrifying thing, though, was that they burned in silence, trying to walk towards us through the flames until their musculature gave out and they collapsed, consumed by the imperative to kill the swarm's enemies no matter what the cost. On the other side of the blazing barrier, the Kroot were overwhelmed in seconds, despite their phenomenal skill in close-quarter combat, swinging the blades of their curious pole-arm rifle hybrids to tremendous effect. But for every eviscerated cultist that fell, another stepped forward, and then the pure strains tore into them. And it was all over in less than a second. Gorok was the last to fall, standing alone and defiant on a pile of the dead until a frenzied flurry of blows shredded his body in a shower of blood. What happened to the Tau, I couldn't see, but they'd stopped firing, so they'd either managed to disengage or they were all dead by now. My money was on the latter. But even if I was wrong, we'd never be able to rejoin them now, so the question was merely academic in any case. I swear I'd only glanced back for a second, but when I looked round, I was alone. The others had retreated as I'd ordered, but which of the half-dozen tunnel mouths they'd disappeared down was anybody's guess. The terror of isolation gripped me for a moment. Then I pulled myself together. The pool of Prometheum wouldn't burn forever, and the cultists presumably knew this labyrinth well enough to circumvent it without too much difficulty in any case. So if I stayed where I was any longer, I was a dead man. "Jürgen!" I shouted. "Inquisitor!" There was no answer. So I picked the nearest tunnel and started to run. As I entered the welcoming darkness, the panic I tried to force down resurfaced, stronger than before, and try as I could to make myself slow down and get my bearings, fear had control of my limbs now. I ran as hard and as fast as I could, heedless of the dangers that might be lurking in the darkness around me, or the hidden obstacles which were likely to be lying in wait for an unwary shin or an ankle to turn, and didn't stop until my breath was rasping my lungs like sandpaper and my legs had begun to tremble from the exertion. Panting hard, I sat on a convenient heap of rubble and tried to take stock of my situation, which was undoubtedly grim whichever angle I looked at it from. For one thing, I was still deep underground, in a labyrinth I didn't know how to get out of, infested with slavering monsters. For another, the only allies I had down here probably thought I was dead, and even if they didn't, they weren't likely to waste any time searching for me. The information we'd gathered about the true nature of the threat gnawing away beneath our feet was too important to risk, and Amberlee would insist on returning to the surface as quickly as possible to warn the Lord General. At least if our positions were reversed, that's what I would have done. On the plus side, however, I was quietly confident of finding my way back to the surface given enough time, provided I didn't run into any more company on the way. And my solitude was a positive advantage in that regard, as a man moving alone will always be more stealthy than a group. Corridors like these had been my playground as a child, and I'd never quite lost the knack of finding my way around them. Despite my panic-stricken flight, I still had a vague idea of which direction our compound lay and how far we'd come. In fact, if my guess about us being somewhere under the old quarry was accurate, I might even be closer to the surface than I realised. And once I'd made it back to the open air, returning to the compound shouldn't prove at all difficult. And in case you were wondering, the irony of genuinely experiencing what I'd briefly considered feigning the previous night wasn't lost on me. Fleeing in terror, I'd just like to note in passing, for those of you who have so far been lucky enough to avoid the experience, generally leaves you both hungry and thirsty. At least that's been the case with me on most occasions, and I've done it frequently enough to qualify as something of an expert on the topic, so I hope you'll take my word for it. Anyhow, I decided to take advantage of this relatively peaceful interlude to replenish my energy. So I sat for a while longer, sipping water from my canteen and chewing a ration bar, the flavour of which, as usual, hovered just outside the range of identification. The impromptu picnic raised my spirit somewhat, and I took advantage of the quiet moment to still the thudding of my heart and try to distinguish the sounds in the darkness around me. I briefly considered turning the luminator back on, but decided against it, as it would give my position away. Besides which, my eyes had adjusted to the gloom as well as they were going to by now, and I could quite readily distinguish vague shapes of lighter or darker shadow. My other tunnel rat senses had come into play too. I could tell by the echoes how close I was to a wall, for instance. I've often tried to explain it, but the only way you could really understand it is if you'd spent a large part of your early life in the lower levels of a hive somewhere. It was while I was gradually recovering my wits that I first heard the faint scrape of something moving in the dark. Now, I dare say most people's reaction under those circumstances would have been to call out or snap the luminator on, neither of which was a particularly attractive option given my current situation, as I'm sure you'll appreciate. Besides, I wasn't particularly concerned as to what it might be. As I've said before, the environment was one I knew well, and I'd be happy to match my experience of blind fighting in tunnels against almost any foe. I was also pretty confident that any Steelers or hybrids in the vicinity wouldn't have bothered lurking either, just charged straight in. So I simply waited, and was rewarded a moment later by the faint skittering sound of a small piece of rubble falling away. That was a sound I could identify with some confidence, and I concluded that I was sharing my refuge with some kind of vermin. An accurate assessment, as I was soon to discover, but not quite in the way I'd imagined. Before I could consider the matter further, however, I was distracted by a faint tinnitus in my ear, which gradually rose in volume until I was able to distinguish an almost inaudible wash of static. My combead was active, and that could mean only one thing. Someone was transmitting on the command frequency reasonably close by. Moreover, there was only one person it could possibly be. A conclusion confirmed by the faint voice, unmistakably feminine, which ebbed in and out of audibility. "Can you hear? Commissar? Respond?" The breath sighed from my lungs as relief punched me in the gut. They might have moved out, as the mission demanded, but it seemed they hadn't given up on me entirely after all. "Inquisitor?" I asked cautiously. "You wish." The voice was close and harsh, and if Kelp had been able to resist the taunt, the rifle butt which followed it would probably have stove my skull in. As it was, he'd been considerate enough to warn me, so I ducked it easily and drove my fist into the pit of his stomach, which was still protected by his hard-shell body armour, of course. So much good it did me apart from bruising my knuckles. The real ones, anyway. The augmetics were rather more robust than that. He was still off balance, though, so I drove my hip in and tried to throw him, but he twisted out of the way just in time. For a big man, he was a pretty fast mover, I'll give him that. A vivid memory of the brawl in the mess hall flashed across my mind, so I ducked again, and sure enough, he tried the same spinning kick he'd almost managed to bring Trebek down with. Advantage to me, I thought. That'll teach you to play tag with a hiver in a tunnel, and I began to draw my chainsword to finish this quickly. Consequently, I was completely unprepared for the low-level sweeping kick that followed, cracking into the back of my knee and pitching me to the floor. "You were almost right," he sneered. "I am in a world of hurt, but it's not mine, is it?" He kept trying to kick me while I was down, but the armour under my greatcoat protected me for the second time that day, and the impacts against my ribs were merely annoying rather than crippling. Then again, I suppose he might have done a better job if he'd concentrated on what he was doing instead of talking about it. I stayed silent, masking all but my general position in the darkness, and rolled aside, drawing the chainsword at last. "If you're going to fight, fight," I said, using the sound of my voice to draw him in and mask the whine of the blade as it powered up. "Don't make speeches." He must have thought he had me, because he charged in with a roar of triumph, striking down with the rifle butt at where he must have thought my head was. But I'd already moved by then, rolling aside and slashing at his legs with the weapon. I'd hoped to take the treacherous mongrel off at the knees, to be honest, but the keening of the blade must have warned him, and he turned aside at the last second. So all I got was a good cut across one of his calves. Emperor's guts! It must have done the job, though, because he was backing off, and the chamber was suddenly bright with half a dozen luminators bobbing in hands or utility tape to the barrels of hellguns. "Commissar!" Amberlee nodded to me, a casual greeting as though we'd just met in the street. "Inquisitor!" I rolled to my feet, advancing on Kelp, who limped backwards, his expression panicky. A trail of blood followed him. "Excuse me a moment. I'll be right with you as soon as I've finished this." "Stay back!" He raised the hellgun, aiming it at my chest. Incredibly, he still didn't seem to realise that I'd concealed armour there, or he'd have gone for a headshot, I'm sure. "One more step and I'll kill you!" I stopped, still a couple of metres too far to finish him off with the chainsword, and he smiled maliciously. "Or do you still think you can do something from there?" I shrugged. "Jürgen, kill him," I said. The expression on Kelp's face was almost comical for the half-second or so that he still had one. Then he exploded into a small pile of gently steaming offal. I turned to my aide, who was lowering the melter, and nodded in acknowledgement. "Thank you," I added. "You're welcome, sir," he replied, as though he'd rendered me no greater service than pouring my tea, and I turned back to Amberlee. "This is a pleasant surprise," I added, playing the unflappable hero for all it was worth. "I didn't think I'd see you again until I got back to the barracks." "Neither did I," she admitted with a slight smile. "But I picked up the carrier away from your combead, and we just headed in the direction the signal was strongest in." "I'm glad you did." I glanced across to where Trebek was scraping a gooey piece of kelp residue from her boot. Amberlee's smile broadened. "You seem to have the situation well in hand," I shrugged. "I've faced worse odds." "No doubt. But he did you a favour, in a way." I must have looked puzzled at that point, because she explained as though pointing out something obvious. "He made you a lot easier to find. Once we got close enough, we just had to follow the noise." Her words hit me like a bucket of ice water. Or a Valhallan shower, which I don't recommend to the unwary, by the way. "Form up," I said to the troopers. "We're moving out."
"Just a moment, sir."
Hollenby was rummaging in his medkit. "I'd like to get you patched up first." I swear that was the first time I realised I'd taken any damage from the scuffle, or possibly the firefight in the big chamber. My knuckles were smeared with blood. My first thought was that it served me right for punching a suit of carapace armour, but they hadn't been skinned all that badly, and the augmetic ones not at all. Most of it had come from the large graze on my forehead, which, now that I'd finally noticed it, had begun to sting abominably. I fended the young medic off as he sprayed it with something. "We don't have time for that," I said. If you heard something, you might not have been the only ones. That got them moving, let me tell you. The thought of facing another horde of hybrids and pure strains was enough to motivate anyone. We moved out in good order, though. I was pleased to note the surviving members of the team actually seemed to mesh together as soldiers should. Now Kelp was gone, the friction which had marred the mission since it started had dissipated, seemingly along with his molecules, and Trebek took point without needing to be ordered to. If she kept this up, I found myself thinking, I might even consider letting her have a corporal stripes back. We were lucky back there, I said, falling in beside Amberley again. She raised an eyebrow. How so? When they attacked before, most of them went for the Tau rather than us. And you found that curious? I nodded. When I fought Steelers before on Kefia, they didn't prioritise, just went for the nearest targets. Intriguing, she said. Mind you, after that Promethean tank went up, they could only get to the Xenos anyway. It was before then, I said, right at the start. They only seemed to come after us once we'd started to retreat. And you say this isn't typical gene stealer behaviour, she prompted. Not in my experience, I confirmed. I see. Thank you, Commissar. She looked thoughtful, and once again, her eyes were fixed on Jürgen. We pushed on quickly, following a run of piping which seemed to be tending upwards, but I couldn't shake the sense of unease that settled over me as we trotted through the dark. I'd suggested dousing the luminators again, but Amberley overruled me, insisting we make the best time we could, so I left my own off and hurried along at the rear of the group. That way I got the benefit of the others' lights without making myself quite so obvious a target. I didn't like it, though. My palms were tingling again, and my scalp crawled with the anticipation of a sudden shot from the shadows, or an eruption of pure strains from the darkness. One thing I'd learned from my previous encounters with the creatures, they were remarkably stealthy and preferred to strike from the shadows, as the Astartes I'd boarded the Space Hulk with had learned the hard way. The hybrids weren't so worrying, their human genes making them both more conspicuous and easier to kill, even if they were able to use ranged weapons against us. So far, so good, Amberley muttered, which was tempting fate if ever I heard it. We'd been remarkably lucky so far, but I knew that couldn't be expected to last. They won't be too far behind, I reminded her. In fact, given the speed at which they moved, I was vaguely surprised that they hadn't caught up with us yet. Sudden understanding hit me like a blow to the stomach. They didn't have to comb an entire labyrinth to try and find us. They had sentries posted on the main routes in and out. All they had to do was wait and reinforce their perimeter guards, and we'd walk right into them in our own good time. Wait, I said. We could be running into an ambush. I thought rapidly, calculating our most probable position and the distance we'd penetrated after finding the cavern full of the Tau's victims. We were still comfortably short, but the sudden detonation of a las bolt ahead, blowing shards of rockcrete from the wall beside Trebek, derailed my chain of thought at once. I'd missed a trick. They were combing the corridors from their outer perimeter, tightening the noose around us. Pull back! Consolidate! I yelled as Trebek crouched low to return the fire. Running figures could be seen beyond her, picked out by the beam of the luminator taped to the barrel of her gun, and she squeezed the trigger, felling a young man in the uniform of the PDF. For a moment I wondered if we'd made a horrible mistake, and were opening fire once more on our own allies. But some of the other figures beside him were unmistakably hybrids. One young woman, who might have been attractive if it wasn't for the third arm growing from her right shoulder blade, tipped with a gene stealer's razor-sharp claws, flicked the tip of a Xenoist braid from her eyes with a monstrous appendage. A surprisingly delicate gesture, I remember thinking at the time, and levelled the heavy stubber cradled in her other two hands. Before I could cry a warning, Sorrel punched a hole through her head with his usual unerring accuracy. A second PDF trooper, his uniform embellished with a blue towel tied round his upper arm for some reason, cried out in anguish, dropping his las gun and cradled the body. I don't think we can, Commissar. Jürgen was his usual phlegmatic self, seemingly as unconcerned as if he was asking me to approve a routine piece of paperwork. They're behind us as well. He was right, too. The sounds of scurrying feet echoing down the tunnel in the direction from which we'd come. We have to punch through, Amberley said decisively. Valade and Hollenby nodded grimly to one another and opened fire on the cultists in support of Trebek, hugging the walls to present the lowest target profile.
"Better do it fast," I shouted.
I'd shone my illuminator back down the corridor, and my heart nearly stopped. Instead of more ragged cultists, the narrow passage was choked with pure strings, jaws gaping, their teeth dripping slobber, as they charged forward at what looked like the pace of a landspeeder. I drew my las pistol and fired a futile volley at them. The lead one fell, and was instantly trampled to goo by the weight of the others as they ran over it, the snapping of chitin and the squish of its bodily fluids turning my stomach. And you really don't want to know about the smell.
"We're running out of time!"
Jürgen sent a melter blast down the corridor, but it barely slowed them. For every one that fell, there seemed to be an army in reserve.
"We're doing our best!"
Trebek called, aiming and firing in one smooth motion. Every time she squeezed the trigger, another cultist died, and her torso armor was scored with lasbolt impacts. Whatever crimes she'd committed aboard the Righteous Wrath, she'd more than atoned for, and the flush of satisfaction I felt at this vindication of my decision to prevent her execution almost managed to drive out the rising terror I felt at the onrushing tide of chitinous death, which by now was almost upon us. Abruptly, Trebek took a bolt to the chest, the explosive tip bursting through her ribcage, splattering the wall next to her with viscera. She just had enough time to look surprised before the light faded from her eyes.
"Bella!"
Hullenby lowered his hellgun and scrabbled for his medkit. I grabbed his shoulder.
"Keep firing," I shouted. "She's beyond help."
And so would we be in a few more seconds if we couldn't punch our way out of here. He nodded and brought the weapon back on aim, squeezing the trigger reflexively. Amberley's bolt pistol barked in my ear, and another former PDF trooper died as messily as Trebek had done.
"This could be it,"
I said, feeling the peculiar light-headed fatalism that often kicks in when death looks inevitable. The tight knot of fear dissolved, replaced by the calm certainty that nothing I did now would make any difference. But I was damn well taking as many of the bastards with me as I could. The Inquisitor turned to answer me, but before she could say anything, a lasbolt burst against the side of her head.
"Amberley!"
I yelled. But to my astonishment, she was suddenly gone, vanishing without a trace, apart from the sudden thunderclap of displaced air rushing in to fill the sudden vacuum in the space which she'd occupied. "What the hell?"
"Commissar."
Her voice was suddenly in my combeat. "Tell Jürgen to shoot the wall about 3 meters back from his current position.
Hurry!"
Sudden hope flared, and I did as I was bid, though, as you'll appreciate, I wasn't in any position to understand what had happened to her or why she would issue so strange an instruction. To his credit, Jürgen complied as quickly and efficiently as he obeyed any order, and to my astonishment, a large hole appeared instantly about a meter across. The wall there was barely the width of my forearm, and I dived through before the sides had even had a chance to cool.
"This way!"
I shouted. Valade and Hollenby started to fall back, while Sorrel took a final shot at the onrushing pure strains. Jürgen turned to do the same, unleashing another blast of ravening energy, and then the masonry over the gap started to crumble.
"Hurry!"
I yelled, but it was too late. With a grinding roar, the wall collapsed behind me, raising a cloud of choking dust and sealing my companions in with the creatures, which would surely kill them all. Now, under any normal circumstances, the idea that I was safely sealed away from a gene-stealer horde behind tons of fallen masonry would just leave me feeling intensely relieved. I can only assume I got hit on the head or something, because without a second's thought, I started scrabbling at the rubble, trying to clear the way back to the corridor, which by now would undoubtedly be decorated with the internal organs of the others. I only desisted when I felt a hand on my shoulder.
"Leave it, Caiaphas."
Amberley shook her head regretfully.
"They're past helping now."
I stood, slowly brushing the dust from my clothes, and wondered how I was ever going to manage without Jürgen. 13 years was a long time to serve together after all, and I was going to miss him.
"What happened?"
I asked, blinking dust from my eyes. It felt as though my brain was full of it too.
"Where did you go?"
"Here, apparently." Amberley looked around at the chamber we were in. It wasn't very prepossessing, but at least it was free of gene stealers. "The displacer field dumped me here when I got shot."
"The what?"
I shook my head dazedly.
My hair was full of dust too, and I couldn't find my cap. For some reason, that seemed very important, and I kept looking round for it, even though it was almost certainly buried under piles of debris.
A common symptom of shock. Hardly surprising under the circumstances.
Displacer field. If I take a strong enough hit, it teleports me out of the way. She shrugged. Most of the time, anyway. Useful toy, I said. When it works. She glanced round the chamber. Shall we go? Go where? I asked, still trying to take it all in. Away, fast. She swung her luminator beam over a darker shadow in the corner of the room. This looks like a way out. I nodded. I can feel an air current. Good. She looked at me curiously, and I realized that she couldn't. What is it they say? You can take the boy out of the hive. Let's go, then. Well, I didn't have any better ideas, so I trailed along after her. Although if I'd known what we were heading into, I might just have decided to stay put after all.